The following presentation, Computational Science and Engineering Grand Challenges in Rolls-Royce, was given by Lee Lapworth of Rolls-Royce at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
Okay, good morning. So just a few slides to introduce you to Rolls-Royce, first of all. Rolls-Royce is one of those names, everybody recognises the name. Not many people know exactly what we do. So predominantly our biggest business is still civil aerospace, so we make engines. Our core business is power of various forms, so engines for civil aerospace, defence aerospace, then we take the jet engine technology and put it in land-based power stations. We also do what's called marinising the engine, so we put gas turbines into marine vessels, and we also do diesel engines and other power systems. So a core business based on power systems, still largely aerospace dominated, it's not quite 50%, and over the years that I've been at Rolls-Royce, we've moved from a predominantly original equipment manufacturer to now over 50% of our business is services. So a lot of network issues in getting data from aircraft and analysing that data, data analytics and data science are big growth areas for us in the future. So David mentioned what's the impact of simulation and what is the impact of high performance computing. So my talk is going to focus predominantly on high performance computing, the challenges that we have and the things that we want to use the things that we want to do with high performance computing. So here's an example of impact. So this is our latest engine, the Trent XWB. It goes on the A350, the Airbus A350, and relative to the engine that it's replacing, it's about 10% more efficient. So that, in terms of real economic benefit for the operators, so that's $2.5 million per aircraft per year of benefit that generates. And the way fuel prices are going and with emissions, performance and fuel consumption of our engines will always be a major driver for the industry. So if we break that down, this is available on our website. So if you want to go and look at this, there's a nice what we call an infographics on this engine. So there's lots of details about the engine. So this is one element of the infographics slide. So this just breaks down how did we achieve that level of performance and breaks it down into various things where we've used simulation and then HPC. And in many ways, computers are just a means to an end. We need HPC because we want to run big simulations, and we want to run big simulations because we want to design new products and so on. So my background is computational fluid dynamics, so CFD. I did that for many years before I took my current role. So as you can imagine, performance, airflows, performance is largely affected by airflows, so CFD is a fairly major contributor. Finite element analysis for stress, stress, weight, lifing, impact are all done. So if you take something like the fan at the front of the engine, so a lot of swept technology in that fan, ultra efficient. The shape to achieve that efficiency was defined by the CFD. The stress, the weight was through the finite element analysis, and then we have various regulatory requirements we have to satisfy for the engine, one of which is to withstand bird strike. So we simulate bird strike through the impact CFD. And all of those use both high performance computing and powerful desktops to do that. As we go through the various features of the engine, the compressor section there, advanced aerodynamics again, predominantly achieved through CFD. Sealing technology, obviously, as we're compressing the air likes to go from high pressure to low pressure. So the pressure is much higher, typically 30, 40, 50 to 1 at the back of the compressor. Ideally, the air would like to go back to the compressor the wrong way. So we have various sealing technologies, and in order to control those seals, again, that is both computational fluid dynamics and finite element analysis, and so on through the system. Lots of CFD and lots of finite element analysis. Touching on then the research side of things and how we work with the research communities, and I'll say quite a little bit about our university technology centres. This is data from our last annual report showing the investment that we're making ourselves. So the dark blue is our own internal investment, and then the light blue is the gearing that we achieve from organisations like the TSB in the UK. This is actually a global picture, so it's the equivalent of TSB and BPSRC in other bits of the world. So, you know, fairly constant rise, yeah, and again, through things like the credit crunch, fairly consistent levels of spend through there, and then a jump up last year as we acquired a German company called Tottenham. So last year, in total, we actually spent a billion, I think that's pounds, £1 billion on R&D last year. So, you know, serious investment and serious continued investment in research. A lot of our research we do through university technology centres. So Rolls-Royce has had a long history of working with universities all the way back to Whittle and Cambridge in the 40s and 50s. It started life as a fairly loose collaboration. So we had lots of research in lots of universities, and towards the late 80s we realised that actually there was a need to focus that. We weren't really achieving any economies of scale in working with lots of different people. So we adopted the policy of focusing our research within particular universities, and we created this concept called the University Technology Centres, and they were formal collaborations with particular universities. The key is that they are with departments and groups, they're not with the university as a whole, so we will pick a particular group and department to work with. They are generally based on a five-year agreement, so we have a rolling five-year commitment between ourselves and the universities, so it gives long-term stability. It started in the UK. Over the period that I've been in Rolls-Royce, we've moved from a predominantly UK-based company to now a big global footprint. So we now have UTCs within Europe, Germany, USA. Our major engineering sites are UK, Germany, and US. So there, the marine business is based in the Nordics, Norway, Sweden. We've got some control, some electrical work in Italy, South Korea and Singapore. The philosophy is to each UTC focuses on a particular technology area, and we'll see that in a minute, but collectively they give us a portfolio of research products that cover a whole range of things from the areas that I'm interested in, such as aerodynamics, all the way through to manufacturing. And I say we've had a consistent strategy of developing that with universities. The bird's eye view of where we are with the UTCs, we have now 19 in the UK, there are 29 in total, a few in Europe, a few in North America, and then you have some developing ones in Asia. If we look at the actual map of where they are and what they do, you can see that there are actually some quite specific technologies here. So there's one up here, lightweight structures, performance in the seaway is obviously for a marine, so that they are very specific areas. I'm going to talk a little bit about Loughborough because that's geographically close to Derby. So we've got a UTC in Loughborough, which is combustion systems and aerothermal processes. But as you can see, the technologies are quite varied. We also have now, through things like the TSB Catapult initiatives, what was initially the Technology Innovation Centres, we now have what we call advanced research centres. So we have a number of those. There's an advanced forming research centre in Strathclyde. So, you know, at the end of the day, Rolls-Royce is a manufacturing company. We make products that we sell. So, you know, advanced manufacturing is an important part of our business. And again, we've got sort of centres in the UK, but we're also then developing centres, centre in Virginia, we've got a centre in Singapore, one in Bristol. So that's our network of research collaborations that we have. I'll come back a little bit now to my own area, which is design systems engineering, so a little bit about what we do and our vision for simulation, and then draw that together with how we want to connect our ambition with the people that we work with. So, you know, we've got a wide range of tools. So we've got computational fluid dynamics. We do that for predominantly for performance aerodynamics. I'll say a little bit more about that in the next. Cost modelling, increasingly, you know, all industries have got to control costs and to know what the cost is going to be before you commit to a program. So as you can imagine, committing to building a jet engine is an expensive program. So you really need to have a handle on the cost before you commit to it. So cost modeling is very important. Finite element analysis, traditional type activities, basic stress, but also vibration, lifing, linear, nonlinear analysis. Materials modeling, that's a new area that will grow dramatically in the future. Being able to design materials, some of the environments that our engines operate in are very hostile. Multidisciplinary design, so as we start to simulate multiple components and multiple systems, we also want to simulate the multiple physics. And we've, for many years, we've been doing coupled CFD and finite element for vibration analysis. So what's our vision? Where do we want to go? So one of the features of a jet engine is the back drives the front. So the air comes in the front, it gets compressed by the fan and the compressor, goes through the combustor, rapid expansion through the turbine. So we have multiple shafts and effectively the back drives the front, so which makes it a highly coupled system. So the back changes the front and anything in between also changes the front. So you've really got to do the whole thing to get to a full fidelity capability. Now fortunately you don't need to do that all the time. I'll show you that in the next slide. But if we actually sit down and think what would it actually take to do a full fidelity, resolve all the physics, try and do as minimum amount of modelling as possible. So you just find a big computer, do a big mesh, stick it on the computer and let it run. There's a big degree of finger in the wind in some of these estimates. So, but you get to, if you're familiar with finite element type analysis, you have degrees of freedom. So if, degrees of freedom is the number of unknowns that you have and then the times, essentially the mesh size. So in CFD, if you have a mesh of a million nodes and then, the velocities, pressures, temperatures, and two turbulence models, that's 7 million degrees of freedom. So we get to a trillion degrees of freedom. So if you were going to do a finite matrix inversion, that would be the rank of the matrix that you'd have to invert. Again, it's really hard to sort of estimate core errors because the power of the chips changes, the petaflops per core generally increases over time. But using today's benchmark, it's probably about a billion core errors to do one of those calculations. So Archer, which is about, 1.6, 1.7 petaflop machine, would need the whole of Archer for about 20 months to do one of those calculations. Or if we could find an exascale machine, we could do it in a day. So those are sort of numbers that we're aiming towards. And I say this is a vision of where we want to go. The nice thing with some of these visions is there's lots of benefits along the way. So why is this a challenge? Why does it need such a big calculation? So if you look at turbo machinery, predominantly the specific fuel consumption, the efficiency of the jet engine is governed by the air path through the machine. The turbo machinery is pretty strong lever on the performance. So if we take a look just inside the one of the turbines, this is a research turbine that we've done. Effectively, it's a collection of rotors and stators. So for each row of stator, we call this a stage, a stator and a rotor. The rotors obviously are moving past the stator. So what that means is computationally, in order to model that, we need to put a plane there that sort of couples the two together. So we call that a sliding plane. The difficulty we have computationally is every time step we update the position of the rotor, then the topology and the connectivity across that sliding plane changes. So in terms of load balancing and getting good scalability of codes on HPC, it's a difficult problem. Now fortunately, there are lots of approximations that we can make to make this tractable. Let's say if we had to have that type of calculation to design engines, well we wouldn't be where we are today. So this is a fairly traditional modelling approach. This has been around for many years. Effectively, what you do is you say, well, if I just average in the sort of tangential direction or the circumferential direction, all of the unsteadiness gets averaged out. So I can effectively, it's not quite taking a snapshot of where the rotor is. It is actually averaging the effect of the rotor. So what that means is I can now do a steady state calculation, The real key to this is because you've made the averaging and you're averaging around the circumference, instead of in this instance having to have a calculation with two blades, two stators and four rotors, you can get by with just one stator and one rotor because you've averaged out all the unsteady effects. So all of a sudden, the number of degrees of freedom drops down to something quite tractable. So 10 to 100 million degrees of freedom, that's, you know, we can run that overnight, 48, 64 cores, machine would run that overnight, and we can do lots of those and do those in design iterations. So, you know, I said that's tractable, we do that a lot, that's the core of our design activity. The difficulty we have is that we have this cliff edge effect that as we go unsteady now, we now need to do more multiple passages. So in order to model the actual unsteady interactions between the rotors and the stators, we have to have, you know, multiple passages. And if we're doing several stages of a machine, we need to do several rows of the machine. So this one here, this is a research compressor which is specifically designed to have a 4-to-3 periodicity ratio. So the actual numbers for this blade row, for this machine, I forget the exact numbers, it was something like 75 to 92 that we approximated as 3-to-4. So, you know, the whole annulus has got 75 blades and vanes. And so if we did the actual whole annulus, it'd be a much bigger calculation. But we can exploit that, what we call periodicity, to say, okay, well, this is a smaller calculation. So, okay, we go up from, you know, 100 million to a billion degrees of freedom. So that's the degrees of freedom, but we now have to run it unsteady. So it's a much longer calculation to run, to do unsteady. If we then go to multiple shafts, then the shafts are going at different speeds, so there is no simple periodicity anymore. So you're forced then to go with full annulus calculations. So all of a sudden you have, you know, 100 billion, so 10 billion degrees of freedom, and that's just for one element of the gas turbine. So if we put it all together to do the whole gas turbine at this level of fidelity, and this is just the CFD bit of it. Obviously there's the stressing and all the other bits and pieces to put into it. You can easily get to some hundreds of billions of degrees of freedom, and you're not far off a trillion. The benefits that we get, you know, in my time at Rolls-Royce, we've gone from some very simple models to very sophisticated models, you know, all enabled through more computing, faster computers, and, you know, it's a fairly consistent trend. As we do more accurate modelling, we get more accurate results. So if we've got greater physical accuracy, it then means we can design with better confidence, and, you know, we have removed rig tests. We've removed a large number of rig tests from our engine development programs because we can simulate and we can have confidence in our simulation. What we can also do is operability. So the operation of the gas turbine as taking off, flying, cruising, and then landing, those are transient behavior. So, you know, we can't model transient behavior with a steady state code. So as we're able to do these big, large, and steady calculations, we can then design for the operability of the machine. Difficulty with this is it's not easy. It's not just finding a big computer, generating a big mesh, finding a big computer and just running it. There are significant computer science challenges. This is some old work that we did on HPCX, in actual fact. This is work that we did with Professor Nick Hills at Surrey University. This is the original code where you've got some scalability up to about sort of 256 cores, and then essentially it went flat, it died, you know, the scalability stopped. So the code ran at a certain speed at 256. If you ran it on 512, it took the same amount of time to run, so no benefit of running on bigger computers. And the key here, again, was the sliding plane. It was the sliding plane that was slowing down that scalability. The work that Nick did, in the end, we actually achieved superlinear scalability, so actually the code ran faster on, faster than linear. Our approach to solving the grand challenges that we have is, you know, the fundamental physical-based research, new turbulence models in the CFD, we will do with our existing UTCs. We haven't traditionally had a computer science activity within the UTCs, So part of my role is to develop a new computer science and engineering network with computer science specialists, both in-house people that work for me and people in the regional and the national centres. Part of that is then access to both the people and the HPC facilities. And this is where we come to the Janet Reach programme and working with Janet to establish direct connectivity. I'll say what the TRL5 Valley is we work in terms of technology readiness levels. I'm not sure many people know those. There's some Ministry of Defence type thing. So technology readiness levels take us from have a good idea, basic principles, all the way up to a product out in the field. And where we work with the universities and the UTCs are often in this range, and this is funding that EPSA would typically fund. The advanced, the applied research is where TSB would fund it, and then equipment programs are where we actually apply the tools to do design work. So where groups like mine sit are often around here, taking the applied research and converting it into production tools that we can use for design. So we often find there's a valley here in getting the research into the company and across into the company. So enhanced technology transfer through direct access is one of the goals of my team, to sit here and to really pull through the research. And obviously for a company like Rolls-Royce, if we look running on external machines, there are obviously issues with data security, export control, all needs to be in place. In terms of HPC partnerships, we are working with the Hartree Centre, the Blue Jewel machine in STFC, Archer, Hector previously at EPCC, Edinburgh. We're also working with NTSA in the US and IHPC in Singapore. We're working with the regional centres, so the regional HPC centres, the EPSRC funded last year. HPC Midlands is one that we work with closely, but we're also in discussions with some of the others. HPC Wales, for example, we're also in discussion with. We also have our own local offload centres where we just essentially, it's a peak lopping where we run calculations to supplement our in-house capability. So in terms of building the network, we're working with HPC Midlands as a sort of test case. So it's nice because it's only 17 miles from Derby, so we can actually drive there if we need to. We've established a secure access area and a data storage area that's approved by our own internal IT security. Loughborough is also a UTC, so it's tied into our research programmes and it will enable research programmes. We are one of the three that has applied into Janet Reach to establish the direct connection. Again, when we start to talk about connections, the Rolls-Royce side of it will have to be approved by Rolls-Royce Security again. And I say this is a pilot. If this is successful, we'll then use that to go out to the other UTCs and also then to the national infrastructure. So summary, we are at a tipping point in some of our grand challenges. I've shown you the CFD one with the turbo machinery. There are others where, in order to go to the next level of physical fidelity, all of a sudden there's a jump in, often two or even three orders of magnitude in complexity. As with all ourselves, we need help to do this, and we will continue to use our existing sort of people networks and research networks. And what we're looking to add to that established network is the direct connectivity through things with Janet. And what we see with that direct collaboration is it itself will spin off new research opportunities, but also it will achieve more immediate impact of the research that we're doing. So that's it. Thank you. I have, but I can't tell you. but it's highly competitive. So your fuel consumption and efficiency will always be, a major driver for what we do. that's as much as I could say.
What is the nature of that? Because that's often held up as a barrier, and I sometimes suspect it's out of convenience for those who are holding it up rather than
success. Well, for, you know, obviously for companies like Rolls-Royce, you know, external attacks are, you know, a real concern. We've generally got a reasonably good relationship with our own IT security department, so we have pushed through the Loughborough system, and they do accept that actually, if it's encrypted in transit, it's just the two endpoints that need to be secure. So, you
know,
so yes, I mean the concerns are real, the threats are real, so we can't downplay them. And it's about making the business benefit. It's always a balance. All of this stuff is cost benefit, so, or risk benefit. So we do have a good relationship with them and trying to establish the benefits. So part of it is doing this work is, yeah, what are the real benefits of doing this? Sorry, I didn't catch the first bit of the question. I mean, certainly we have considered things like hydrogen and other fuels in the past, biofuels. At the moment, you know, kerosene is still by far the most efficient thing to use, so there's a long way to go on that. It will run out at some point. We are active in that area. We do have research projects, but that stuff we would be at the lower TRL end of the spectrum at the moment.
Thank you very much. Thanks to the audience. I will be spending about 7 hours on Sunday looking at a Rolls-Royce logo, I suspect. On any of us. That's the last of parallel sessions up in this building for that workshop. We now have 45 minutes for the last chance to talk to the exhibitors and have coffee, then the exhibition hall. And after that, we are going to the plenary. Anyone who was here last year or at the Terrain conference or at the Janet 6 launch will have seen and had their jaws dropped by the Lola demonstration. I've been promised that this year it's not Lola, it's better. Don't miss it.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
Let's turn that off.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.